Hey everyone, my name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. Apart from this, the only other obsession that I have for, I have many obsessions, I guess. I'm obsessed with my family, and I'm starting this interview late because we had some family issues. My son was throwing up last night. It was really painful, and so that takes up a lot of my time. Then I also try to get some workouts in, but I barely get a chance to do that. Then I do Mixergy interviews, and when I'm not doing this, the thing that's really made me stress lately is I'm taking on a lot of work around chatbots. I'm so freaking obsessed with them that I know it's eating away into my research time with my guests. I know it's eating away at my family time. I know it's keeping me from running because I think that this is the future of online engagement. I think just like we went from apps to web apps, and that was a dramatic change in the landscape. Then we went from desktop to mobile, and that was a dramatic change, and new companies were born. I feel like chat as a platform is going to do the same thing, that we're going to see new businesses born, new companies rise up because they know how to create experiences inside of chat apps. Chat is being used more and more. Facebook Messenger alone is 1.3 billion people. WhatsApp has roughly the same number. And we're spending more time in chat than we're spending in just about any other medium, including social media, which sucks up a lot of our time. We're spending more time chatting than we are in social media, more time in chat apps than we are in email. So businesses that know how to capitalize on that are going to win in the future. And those that don't are going to watch the others take over. So I've been kind of obsessed with that. And because you guys have heard me talk about this, you're introducing me to companies that are doing really well in this. And one of my old friends, Alexei Pokoharenko, heard me get excited about this. He said, "You've got to meet my friend." I said, "Who's your friend?" He said, "My friend is a guy named Matthew Black. He's had a couple of interesting companies. He used to run this one business, Contextual, which he sold. He had this other business, CrowdHype, which had a rough experience with." But he said, what he's obsessed with, Andrew, like you, is Matthew Black is obsessed with chatbots. And I had our producer talk to him. And this is a guy who had a business that was going well, a digital agency that was going well. He got so freaking obsessed with chatbots that I think he lost it all. Like, revenue was going down. He went in debt. And partially it's because chatbots didn't work out in the first iteration, the first way that we thought it was going to go. But now he's back on top. It's working. It's actually getting him clients, and it's working for his clients. He's building chatbots for businesses. I probed him before the interview started. Is it just that you're selling it to them and they're willing to pay you? He said, no, they're getting results. He gave me some numbers. We're going to talk about as many numbers as we can in this interview because chatbots are working for him and working for his clients. And so I invited him here to talk about a few things. Number one, how does he get clients for this brand new thing that's so hard to explain? Number two, how does he communicate to his clients' users what a chatbot is? Number three, how is he getting results for his clients? And number four, where does he see the future of this medium that is so early stage that I think many of you are probably lost already just because I said the word chatbot? All right, so we're going to get into all of that. He is the founder of Black Ops. It's a boutique agency that provides a suite of services focused on conversational marketing. And conversation is the word that we use now for chatbots because it's more than just like chat in like Facebook Messenger. It's going to evolve and we don't know where. It might be Alexa, it might be Google Home, it might be Siri. We don't know exactly where, but conversational experiences are the future. This interview is sponsored by two companies that I'll tell you more about later. The first is TopTal, which will help you get your next great developer. The second will help you hire phenomenal designers. It's called Design Crowd. I'll tell you more about both those later. Matthew, good to have you on here.
Thank you, Andrew. What an intro. Wow.
I'm looking at my time as I go through the intro. 4.5 minutes. I try to do 2 minutes. I'm like, way over. You know what? Why don't we jump to the end for a second here and just give people a sense of size. Revenue-wise, where are you going to close 2017 since we're three-fourths of the way into the year?
Yeah, so I think we're going to close 2017 just under 1 million. And I think 2018, at least that, if not double that, based off of our pipeline.
So just from building conversational experiences for your clients?
Correct.
And at this point, it's chatbots built on Facebook Messenger. Am I right?
Yeah. So Facebook Messenger is probably, 80% of what people come to us with. We definitely have seen a spike in SMS, which I can talk about a little bit later. And also most recently, Twitter direct message. They just opened up their platform, and the partners over at Twitter have been great to us. So we're trying to educate our customers a little bit more on that as well.
You know what? Let's take a look at one of your clients, the debt company. What are they called?
So they're called Debt Like WTF. Just to give you kind of a brief overview of them, they are a student loan debt consolidation service, which is a hot market right now. And they were around previously before we even talked. And essentially what they would do is they would use Facebook. They would target their ads towards people who they knew already went to college. And they would, rank colleges with the most debt. They would do demographics, 35 and under. And they would send them to their website, which was generally just a lead capture form. And then on the leads, they would smile and dial and call these people and try to walk them through their debt issues.
They had their own employees.
Yeah, two.
Just two people on their team calling up and saying, hey, you got trouble with your school debt. We will consolidate it. We will ease it up for you.
Two people, 12 hours a day. It was unreal. And they were profitable. They were doing 20,000 to 30,000 a month, just these two guys just going bananas. It was funny too, because when they came to us, they thought the benefit of chatbots were simply to just take the ease off these two guys, right? Operationally speaking, how could we make a chatbot make our process more efficient?
What would the chatbot have done in their mind?
So there's two parts. There's a qualifying, to say this customer is actually a good customer for our service. And then there's the fulfillment, collect their income, process the forms with the government, see exactly which loans are with which servicer and say, those are the ones we can help. And then ultimately do the debt consolidation.
So they thought that before you get on a call with one of these two guys, you would talk to a chatbot, you would tell them how much debt you had, you tell them how much trouble you were in for not paying it, and maybe a couple of other questions. And if you had more than a certain amount of debt, if you qualified, then they would get on a call with you. That way the two guys weren't wasting their time on people who weren't qualified. Is that right? That's what they envisioned.
So that's actually what we do now.
So what did they envision?
They envisioned the chatbot servicing less as a qualifying tool and more as a fulfillment tool. Because what they had realized is that, given someone in that circumstance, I'm a 27-year-old suffering with $30,000 worth of student debt, haven't made a payment in the last, 4 months. The last thing I want to be doing is hopping on a phone call and telling someone about it, right? So they had thought, a chatbot, specifically one who lives on Facebook, would be a better way to service those customers. So pre-existing customers they already have, that would be the main touch.
I see. And that chatbots are not ready to do well yet. Am I right?
So it will really depend on who you ask, but I am in the camp that believes that servicing, operations, and the majority of real customer service tasks, the artificial intelligence just isn't there to provide a compelling experience.
Okay, so you had to shift them away from that to today. What do you do? How do they use a chatbot?
Customer acquisition.
So an ad, somebody sees the ad on Facebook. The ad is targeted to them, right? They have to be a certain age, probably have gone to school, etc. They see the ad, they click a button. Do they go directly to Facebook Messenger and start a conversation with the chatbot?
Correct. And we actually use some advanced functionality that does two-way. So the chatbot can actually talk to the ad, and the ad can actually talk to the chatbot. And I know you had a episode on here previously where one of your guests went deep into structured JSON. So I probably won't, go that deep. But essentially, we're making really clever use of that kind of technology.
And that's incredibly powerful, right? I remember when Dimitri of ChatFuel first told me about it, I didn't understand it at all. I've since played with it a little bit, and it's kind of cool. An ad can actually pop up a little chat window on people's desktop computers. people can engage. All right, I'm kind of engaging in this debt-like WTF chatbot right now. I just clicked the start on it. It says, hey there, I'm the debt-like, I'm going to say the full word. I'm the debt-like what the fuck chatbot. I can help you save $$$$ on your student loans. Okay, let's start with a few questions to help me understand how we can help you save some cash. Just click the quick reply buttons that pop up after each question. So here's the first question. Do you have federal loans, Andrew? Ah, this is their way of qualifying. So I'm going to say I'm not sure. Right? If I said I don't have federal loans, I'm assuming that I wouldn't be a good fit. Is your loan balance greater than $8,000? I'm going to say I'm not sure because I don't want to disqualify myself yet. What is the status of your student loan? Is it in forbearance? Is it repayment? Or I'm going to say again, I'm not sure. Got it. Okay. So it's going to keep asking me all these questions. Here's the next one. Are you making payments to your student loans? I'm going to say I'm not sure. Okay. This is now qualifying. And if I'm the right person, then I schedule a call with their people.
Yeah, so it's actually both. There's two ways. So every question that you answer, I just want to point this out, it actually is a dynamic method to score you as a customer. So based on you saying, I don't know, you probably have a low score on their end. And it actually gets sent to their Slack real time. So it's clever.
Someone on the other side just watching their Slack and seeing that I press these buttons.
100%.
So if I start typing something in, they'll get, I'm sure, an alert saying something outside of the usual buttons is happening. You might want to start a conversation with this guy, Andrew.
Yep. And that all depends on the confidence score. And the confidence score can either have the bot reply to you, pause the bot and allow one of the agents at their office to correct the flow of the bot, or simply just stop the bot, code red, someone go in there and manually take over.
So if I were going to, instead of pressing these buttons, say, I cannot sleep. I am in deep trouble right now. My wife and I are arguing over this. Is there someone who could help me? They will see that. And chances are, if they're awake and watching, they can start talking to me right now and saying, calm down, Andrew. We've got you covered. Here's our cell phone number. Call us right now. That kind of thing could happen.
Almost to a T. Exactly.
That's exactly what would happen. All right. When we talk about chatbots, this is the ideal experience that can happen today. In the future, something else can happen, right? But today, this is it. And I think one of the advantages of this is I might feel a little bit reluctant to talk to another human being and admit that I'm having trouble financially paying off my loans, right? But talking to a bot, it feels safer. It takes away the example that I keep referring back to is the one from, I think it was the US Army that I heard about on NPR years ago. They had a chatbot for new recruits. New recruits will not talk to, dudes will not talk to another dude and say, how many pairs of underwear should I bring on my first day? Because you feel like a sissy for doing it and you feel like a wimp, right? Mm-hmm, but they'll go in the chatbot and they'll ask that kind of a question and they'll get an answer. That is the kind of experience that I think bots are exceptional at, right? Questions that come up often that a human being shouldn't have to repeatedly answer, and that people would rather address to a machine than to a human. True?
Couldn't agree more. And, you know, it really goes back to the whole thing of, you know, you briefly talked about this in your intro. Chatbots are a completely new medium right now, right? It's a new market. It's not a mature market, but there are strengths and weaknesses, right? One thing that a chatbot is extraordinarily well at is allowing people to feel safe, right? I have nothing to lose about telling a chatbot about my financial situation, no matter how bad it is, because I know a chatbot isn't going to judge me.
Right.
It's not. And if you can play into that, you'll see great results, which we're seeing.
Let's talk about numbers. I've kind of trained my audience to care about numbers. So before they had a chatbot, they had the standard landing page. They had ads that were dialed in. They had people who were ready to take on the work that came through that. What was their cost per lead at that point? And then what's the cost per lead now with this chatbot?
Yeah. So for a qualified lead, and just to clarify what a qualified lead is, this is someone who clicked on an ad, got dropped off to their landing website, filled out the form, which is essentially the questions the chatbot was asking you, and said, call me. They were paying roughly around $18, which is an industry standard. And arguably, that's even on the lower end of what some other competitors are paying for this.
And now, $18 per lead for debt consolidation. What is it now?
Now we're seeing anywhere between $4 and $7 a pop. And that is mind blowing yes. for that industry.
Yeah. And part of it is that it's a better medium for this than a landing page. The other part is it's novel, right? I can't name other debt consolidators who are doing this, right?
Yep.
And I think that's the advantage of jumping in and doing this today, doing it when they are. You know what? I'm kind of hesitating because there's something that I want to go back to that we talked about a moment ago, which is the sense of privacy. People do yep. feel more comfortable because they're talking to bots, and they are. And for the most part, human beings aren't going in and reading it. But I have to be open and say to people who are listening to me, as a business owner, I see every freaking interaction that I have with my bot that happens on Facebook Messenger. And we do have one. I created one for Bot Academy. You could see it yep. at botacademy.com. Everything that you type in, including if you make sexual remarks to the bot, I can see it. And if you answer something like I have huge debt, the company that operates it can see it. And more than that, there is no anonymity in this, as opposed to the old chatbots that happened on the web. The one that I'm talking about with the military, it happened on the web. There is anonymity. Here, there isn't anonymity, and that's for good and I don't know, evil, but it's just the way it is. To a business owner, the benefit of that is you're getting a real person. You know who they are. They know my name is Andrew. I didn't fake it, where I might fake it if I went to a landing page. I might give them a bad email address if I went to a landing page, because like a Mailinator email address, because I'm not feeling comfortable yet. Mm-hmm. So business owner, it gives you real data, real usage. As a user, you should be aware that when you're talking to a bot, it's not complete anonymity. If anything, it's complete whatever the opposite of anonymity is. It's completely directed at you. I'm surprised that you got into this business. I'm surprised that you were willing to do this. I think you told our producer that one of your last companies was, what's the word? Let me see if I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Contextual?
Yeah, you said it was a shit show. I don't want to insult.
Contextual was actually the one that wasn't as big of a shit show. CrowdHype is one here.
Yeah. So yep. The thing is that you're going all in on this. You had a bad experience in business. I'm surprised that you would go all in. Let me take a moment to talk about one of my sponsors, and then we're going to come back in and ask you why you went all in on this. The sponsor is a company called Design Crowd. There are times in our business careers where we need small designs made. For me, for Bot Academy, we teach people how to create chatbots. We certify them. Bigger businesses are now hiring our certified consultants, and they want to show on their website, I'm a certified Bot Academy graduate. Andrew stands by my work. You can take whatever Andrew's reputation is with Bot Academy, and you can trust that I'm good based on that. And in fact, ManyChat now is giving our certified graduates a lot of business by referring people who bigger businesses who want chatbots in them. Well, the thing is that I don't know how to freaking design that. I don't want to work even with my designer whose work I like to do it, because I want more examples. I want more ideas for whatever this badge is that our certified professionals will get to put on their website. And so I went to Design Crowd, and they had, I think it was 4 questions that I had to answer, like, what are you looking for? What needs to be a part of this? A couple of things like that. I filled it out and I went home. For some reason, I always do this on a Friday with Design Crowd. I came in on a Monday having forgotten the whole thing. I clicked in and I saw a bunch of designs. Now, I'll be honest with you. I had like 150 designs. I think 100 of them were shit. And the reason is these guys created a brand new logo for me. And I don't want a brand new logo. I want to take my freaking logo and just attach it to this certified badge that we're going to give our certified professionals. So what I did was I just went in and I started giving everyone feedback. I said, I don't want a new logo. Use my current logo. I rated the ones that I liked best so that everyone got to see what my feedback was. I adjusted my brief to say, you know what, if everyone's seeing it this way, I can't blame all these designers who are giving me logo ideas. It's probably my problem. So I went in, I adjusted my brief to say, I don't need a new logo. Please use our logo. Here's a link directly to our logo. And now all these designers are improving their work, and I'm getting even better designs. And I think we've got someone who are going to pick from this. And the idea behind Design Crowd is a crowd of designers submit their designs to my specifications. I give them all feedback. And then the one that I love best is the one that I pay for and get to use. They guarantee that you're going to get what you want. And I think as someone like me, who's not a designer, who doesn't even have the language to communicate what I want and what I don't want, their process makes it really easy. I've talked about Design Crowd for a long time. I've used them multiple times. I urge you to go check them out, but don't go to designcrowd.com. frankly, I won't get any credit for it. But more importantly for you, because you don't give a rat's ass about me getting credit, you will get up to 100% off your design projects if you use this special URL that will give me credit. It is designcrowd.com/mixergy. Designcrowd.com/mixergy. To give you an example of what that cost me. It's roughly like $200 to get, at this point, over 200 different designs submitted to my specifications and adjusted based on my feedback. If you go to that URL, you will also see the work that they did for me to give me a new podcast cover art. And I think you'll even be able to click on and see how I asked for it, what I paid for it, and so on. So even if you just care about Mixergy and see, and you want to see how I've used this, I think it's an interesting URL to go to. Go check it out at designcrowd.com/mixergy. Hey, crowd hype, what was the shit show over there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, looking back, you can identify things that, you know, weren't obvious when you were, you know, living through it. You know, just typical early startup stuff, right? I think we got semi-lucky with our first startup in that we took some VC money from a respected VC. We had a
contextual.
Yeah,
you know what, since we're going back in time, let's go all the way back in time and just bring us to date. And then I want to understand how Black Ops started with getting clients, why it didn't work out for you and where you lost money, how you found good customers for chatbots. But I think if we're going to go get to know you a little bit, let's go all the way back to what your mom did. What did your mom do?
Yeah, so my mom cleaned hotels for a living. We grew up in a pretty poor environment.
Were you embarrassed by that?
You know, at the time, maybe. But now I wear it like a badge of honor.
Right.
It really influences a lot of how I look at the world.
How?
And it's a constant reminder that in what we do, as far as being entrepreneurs, you are owed nothing. And that is a scary thing, but it's also a very beautiful thing because it means that you can have anything.
What do you mean,
right?
I'm owed nothing?
You're not owed customers. You're not owed revenue. You're not owed things that you know, typically we see in other parts of the world. Becoming an entrepreneur, there is no formula. Everyone has their own flavor for making it work. And typically what I see, and what I see in myself, is that the more unique the flavor is, the happier and the faster you grow. And you know, that might be a very high level abstract way of looking at it, but, it is a constant reminder. You know, I'm just grateful for where I am today.
You used to go with her when she cleaned hotels?
Yeah, absolutely. We couldn't afford a babysitter. So, you know, I remember vividly going with my mom, sitting on the end of the bed, and for 20 minutes, because every 20 minutes she had to clean a new hotel.
What would you do while she was cleaning up?
I'd pop on the TV, watch Ren and Stimpy, which, by the way, no child should be watching Ren and Stimpy.
What the hell is that show? And frankly, while we're at it, SpongeBob SquarePants? Who's creating these freaking kid TV shows?
Yeah.
So you do that, and then one time you saw that the hotel had these piece of shit computers, as you told our producer. What made them so crappy, and how did you come across them?
So these were point of sale computers from the 90s.
Oh, I see. I thought it was
And
so, wow, I'm cursing a whole lot here. I must be under a lot of stress today.
No, it's cool. I'll curse with you. So yeah, these were piece of shit point of sale.
Okay, that's what POS means in this context.
Yep,
point of service. Okay, these are stuff that you use at the reception desk.
Absolutely. And they're throwing them away. My mom saw that. She said, hey, I'm going to take one of these home for my son. I think he'd enjoy it. She brought it home, 11 years old at the time. I didn't even know that this thing, I didn't know how to turn this on. So instead of turning it on, I took it apart, put it back together, And I probably did this 5 or 6 times, just learning how a computer from the inside was structured. And I fell in love with hardware, right? I fell in love with just the inside of a computer at a very early age.
It demystifies it to be able to do it without having any danger of losing someone's data on it.
Exactly. You know, I really had no idea. This was before I've ever plugged in the little phone cable and got on the internet. So this was before I understood the impacts of the internet.
You know, when you, to bring it back to chatbots for a moment, when I got curious about it, I went to ChatFuel and they let you make an infinite number of chatbots. And I would kind of do the same thing, create one, take it apart, see one of their sample ones, play with it, delete it, attach it to a real account that I created that's not at all like visible to the rest of the world, and just explore it. And there's something about that exploration that really teaches you by letting you break stuff.
Yeah, and I think it's rooted in the need and the want to be curious, right? And being curious can apply to a hacker culture. It can apply to, you know, it's deep inside of our culture. Everyone, not just developers or hackers, but even people who do sales. I want them to be curious. I want them to find their own unique way of doing things.
Okay, so fast forwarding a little bit, you worked at a company called Killswitch, which had many big clients, including Viacom, the parent of MTV and VH1. Somewhere in there, you were messing around with early chatbots. What did early chatbots do, and how did you mess around with them there?
Yeah, so actually when I was at Killswitch, I actually created some of the first early social networking sites. This was back in MySpace days.
So they would create a social networking site for their product.
Real World Casting website I created. Jackass World Online. Rude Paul's Rude Awakening.
A whole social network around it as opposed to just a form that people who wanted to be a part of the show would fill out?
Because they wanted to gauge how people would actually perform on the show. So for Real World, they didn't know that, you know, people really wanted to see an 18-year-old female in this part of the world put next to a 32-year-old, you know, someone on this side of the world. It was just, you know, at that time they used it as kind of data leverage to construct who would actually end up making it onto the show. Okay. But in that, I learned how to create a social networking site, which was great. And I took that all the way to, you know, where we are today.
Okay. And so did you have any experience at that point with early chatbots, or am I mistaken?
No. So my chatbot kind of education / exposure came a little bit later.
Let's go forward to the first business you had was Contextual. I've got a line here that I found on AngelList to describe what it did. You guys at the time said our cloud and mobile based platform helps companies share important information that's locked in planning spreadsheets, walled off in expensive enterprise platforms, and lost in the black hole of the corporate inbox. Basically, companies have all this data spread everywhere. Nobody knows what it is. And what they end up doing is asking someone on the team, hey, where's this data? Or what's this? And right. And this is the same issue that Slack has noticed and they're trying to solve by having one search box for all your company data. It's still not a fully solved, not a solved problem at all by any means. This is the thing that showed you that you, I'd love to do an interview with you just on that. So we won't go too deep into it today. I want to focus on chatbots, but I feel like you learned something that you brought to Black Ops today. What was it that you brought with you to your experience today?
Yeah. And that hits it right on the head. So, I like to describe Contextual as Slack before Slack. And not that I'm big into comparisons, but at the time we didn't realize that, you could take something so complex and expose it and share it in a messaging platform. So we were threaded, right? We took the very old school look of, you know, create a space called accounting and attach your, you know, AR and PR metrics and pin it on a board, and people would manually have to go out and get it. What we realized towards the end of that startup, a little bit too late, as the market kind of showed us, is that everything should be much lighter. This, you know, instead of having a threaded conversation, it should just simply be a chatbot or a chat messaging.
I thought you kind of had that. You had something that reminded me a little bit of the early Twitter website, you know, with the input box at the top, text to people below. What's the one that that was the business version?
Yammer.
It looked like Yammer in some ways.
Almost identical to Yammer. But still, what we realized is that was too heavy. Even that was too heavy. And that was a key learning towards the end. I like to use this analogy is like, you know, we could have been much more successful had we had sold this thing like a hot rod, right? go to Wall Street, find all the hedge fund managers, teams of 20 to 200, have them put it on their Amex discretionary budget. And this is the cool thing. You just open up the app, your one two line sentence to your team, and everyone's connected, rather than the sell of top down and trying to sell this very complex enterprise system.
I see, where someone at the top of the business has to say, we're buying this, everyone on the team needs it. I see, let them just go and buy it for themselves, use it to chat with each other. And frankly, that's the version that Yammer went for, right?
Yeah, and they were successful because they had those types of accounts under their belt. What Slack did was the inside out sales model, and that worked. And that's the model we should have gone had we had stayed a course.
I've heard that this is when people talk about you, this is like the big sale of your life. My sense is it wasn't generational wealth that we got out of this.
It's not, it by no means was it fuck you money.
Right.
And you know, that's okay. And you
what,
know, no
what did,
one,
what did you exit for?
So it's an undisclosed number that I can't disclose. Let's just say that our investors were happy. You know, it didn't make any founders wealthy. It didn't make any founders, you know, retiring off their island. If that's
so, what did you learn from this then?
Yeah, well, we learned.
You personally, what did you bring forward to your current experience of Black Ops from what happened at Contextual?
Well, don't defer revenue, number one. And that was a very, very rooted lesson that we brought over to Black Ops. And that's why we started to generate revenue on day one. You know, don't always believe what VCs have to say. You know, I definitely don't want to pick a founder VC battle, but I'm much more reserved in this day and age on who, when, and why I would ever raise money. And I'm a very firm believer that you shouldn't raise money to stay alive. I feel like that's a recipe for disaster. Your back's against the wall. You should raise money because you found something that fundamentally works and you need to get there faster. And that's an amazing position to be in. And I think you find partners that are much more aligned with that vision.
Okay, so then the next thing that you did was crowd hype. And again, yeah. I've got a line that I think you guys put online somewhere about it. It's connect and engage with fans and friends around live events. And a live event could be a concert that I go to where I can talk to other people there, but it can also be iOS 25 coming out. I want to see what people are thinking about it. I want to get I want to talk to people about it. And this is what I would have used your app for, right?
Correct. Twitter Moments.
Twitter Moments. I see. Okay. When you say it was a shit show, again, I do a whole interview just on that. What do you mean? What happened?
Yeah. So I think, you know, it means a lot of things, but I think most importantly, it means that we had some very big partners where the vested interest just wasn't there, right? We had some partners that, you know, the intellectual property that we had licensed to be able to do this, which got us access to media and tickets, which, by the way, if anyone's in the ticketing space knows that this is a mafia, not a illegal mafia, but a very close held, you know, single digit number mafia. And
where
to get
a small
there,
group of companies own the vast majority of tickets, and because they own the ticketing and they own the locations, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And we got to know these people, and you know, actually, one of the company who held the intellectual property invested in our company, which ultimately killed us when they got killed. And it was almost like a house of cards in that. You know, we had a great implementation on a great idea. We had extraordinary user value that was being unlocked inside of the app. But because of the order of operation and because our app depended on the intellectual property of a company who was funded by bigger companies, as it started collapsing, we were left there on the bottom.
So what's one thing you took from that and brought to Black Ops?
Yeah, you know, again, do not defer revenue, and stand tall and stand solo. You know, I think a lot of startups get this mentality that they need to have partners, right? They need to have big partners on their deck. They need to have big advisors on their deck. But that's just simply not the case, right? If you have something that is truly valuable, it doesn't matter who your partner is. It just matters how much energy you have to go sell it. And all of that just was just almost this fiery storm that started Black Ops.
When you started Black Ops, you were thinking, I'm going to create a digital agency, right?
Correct.
Why a digital agency? We're living in a world where SaaS just scales so well. You create a software as a service, you get customers. It's painful for the first year or two, but if it's a good product, people will eventually pay you enough that you can fund the business, you can keep momentum going. But when it comes to digital agencies, you have to do the work. You're selling hours, right? Your hours, other people's hours. It doesn't scale. One customer leaves you and you're screwed. Why did you decide to go into this?
Two reasons. The first reason was over the last 4 years of doing startups, we met amazing people. We met, CMOs, we met CEOs, we met board members for big companies and created really rich connections with them, but never found the right opportunity to work with them. So creating a digital agency provided a house for me to go out and recontact all the people we'd met in the last 4 years and say, hey, we can work together now. What do you need? Which turned out to be a very great early sales strategy for us. And two, we knew we could do it differently. All of us were startup founders. All of us were hackers. We knew that the digital agency market was time for almost a hybrid model, which now we do to almost a gross level. But even then, when we were making mobile apps and websites and APIs, we created frameworks that we reused. So it was less about selling hours, and it was more about selling a reusable product that we saw a hole in the market.
I see. And you're right. There are a few companies that do that. Roger Dickey, a past interviewee here, started a company. I forget the name of the company, but essentially what he's doing is saying, well, everyone needs a login screen. So if you're, or not everyone, but if you need a login screen, we already built it. Here's how much it's going to cost you to have that incorporated into your app. If you need a list of customers or a list of users, we built that already. We can add it in for this price. And that's what you were thinking. Modular development, keep reusing the pieces. Is that the kind of thing?
Absolutely. And the most important thing there is that login system is probably the best login system you'll get because it's been battle tested, right? It's been redeveloped and improved and incremented. So while one of the things that a lot of people don't understand with a digital agency until later in their years is that what you charge is value perceived. You know, you don't have to charge per hour. You know, if I make a login screen and it takes me 20 minutes, it doesn't change how much value that is to you, my customer.
Why should I, as a client, have to pay for every minute that goes into it? I want the result. I want the login screen.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So I see the vision here, and I'm looking at the Internet Archive, and I see how your business transformed from being not super specific to suddenly there's a big link on your site saying, here's what Facebook chatbots are, right? So at some point, you found the religion of chatbots. And it seems to have happened around this fashion brand that you worked with, a company from New Zealand. Can you say who they were?
Yeah, they were called Rod and Gun.
What is it? Rot and Gun?
Rod and Gun.
Rod and Gun.
And they're headquartered out of New Zealand. Huge, huge in Australia and New Zealand. I believe they're an $80 million a year fashion company. And they were coming into the States last year. I think they delayed that to this year a little bit, but they're opening up 80 stores in the US. We were building their mobile app, their backend system, and we were helping with the transition to their new point of sale system.
You know what? I see their site. I thought this was going to be a women's brand, but no, it's for dudes.
They opened up their first store in Brooklyn. I believe it's in Dumbo, actually. Right up the street from me. So they're compared to Ralph Lauren.
I can see that. Maybe a little bit more conservative, but the kind of thing that you'd envision yourself taking to a country club, but you can also just go into a local bar wearing and feel comfortable. Okay, yep. So you got to work with them, and they said, "Hey, there's something you need to go and explore." This was in April 2, 2016. What did they say you needed to explore?
Yeah, and to set some context here, this was actually a week before the F8 event last year. So this was before Facebook even publicly messaged or mentioned anything about bots. And they had called us and said, hey, Matthew, we just got off the phone with Facebook. They told us about this super cool thing called bots. Can you do us a favor? Look into it. And, you know, of course, I'll look into it, right? So we got access to some API docs, which, you know, I cross-referenced with one of my developers, and we thought it was very interesting. You didn't quite, you know, see the full vision, but thought it was very interesting from a distribution method, and we kind of shelved it there.
And this was the chatbot platform that Mark Zuckerberg ended up announcing 2016 at F8. And
exactly.
Let me take a pause right here and then come back into the story and pick up from there. The pause is to talk about my sponsor, TopTal. Before the interview started, I asked you, hey, you have any issues with TopTal? Do you invest in a competitor, which sometimes happens? So I wouldn't bring it up. You said, no, actually, I've used them. And so I wondered, how did you use TopTal, the company that anyone can go and hire top developers from?
Yeah. So as a digital agency, sometimes we have influxes of work just so happened to have an influx of work a couple months ago. Needed a Ruby on Rails developer, went on TopTal, heard great things. And it's really cool because what they do is they actually, you have an account person there, but that account person is super technical. It's almost like a CTO. You talk with that person, he really understands kind of from a technical standpoint what you're looking for. And then he handpicks three people for you to talk to. And all the people he handpicked were great. Our CTO paired the interviews with us. He didn't know which person to pick, so we just picked the person who we thought was the coolest. And it worked out really, really well. We were a little worried about you know, hiring someone on the opposite side of the world, how would the time go, the communication, time difference, communication difference. But we experienced almost none of those problems.
Yeah, I'm surprised at how well they do that. I just talked to someone from their team who happened to be here in San Francisco. I said, are you coming here for a business meeting? He said, no, I just travel the world. Yep. He says, I was in Iceland before. I said, isn't that tough? He goes, no, we have specific hours that we work. Everyone knows when they can count on us. And then the rest of the time, I'm exploring a new country. So one of the things that I've understood from digital agencies is they often need the developers to talk directly to their clients. And so did you have that where the developer you hired needed to? No, it was just with you guys. You'd give them the work, the developer would do it and then give it to you, and then you'd interact with your clients.
Absolutely. Yeah, we run a pretty tight ship in that, you know, we're boutique for a reason. And when we do a project, almost the entire team is focused on that project. And I have pretty much the back and forth with the clients, being a salesperson, a technical person. I also can bring that back to my team as well. But we did not have,
they're not the cheapest though.
They're not. But that's actually a selling point to me, right?
Why?
I want to know that, well, one, the person I'm hiring is making a living wage. But two, also, you know, you get what you pay for. It's no different for any product you buy or, you know, any person you choose to hire. I believe in paying well because I want to have a service done well, right?
Yeah. Well, if you guys are out there and you want to sign up for TopTal, it's created by two Mixergy fans. One of them did an interview here. The other, I'm reluctant to ask to do an interview because I think that he's so like secretive about everything. He'd be upset with me for any question that I asked. These guys take their business way seriously. I'm going to get drunk with one of them. I'm not even a get drunk type of person. I would drink just to enjoy the drink, but I would like to see what they're like when they relax because these people are freaking intense, the founders of TopTal. Anyway, they're Mixergy fans. They've created a URL where you can sign up and get this kind of service, get these great developers. And in addition to that, you're going to get 80 hours of TopTal developer credit when you pay for your first 80 hours. And that's in addition to a no-risk trial period of up to 2 weeks. You've heard many Mixergy interviewees here tell you that they've signed up and worked with TopTal, or they've heard me talk about TopTal and they took down the URL and they went and signed up. I urge you to go do it too. It's top as in top of your head, tal as in talent, toptal.com/Mixergy. And I don't think I'll be able to hang out with a drink with them for the next 10 years. These people are so freaking insane. Like so addicted, so focused on what they're doing. they raised money from Mark Andreessen. I asked this guy, so are they going to do another round? Things are going well. He goes, no, they don't need it. They're doing fine. It's, I don't know that I should be saying that out loud, but they are just, you know what? I love people like that. Do you feel like you're like that, where you have this passion now for your business, for Black Ops, that it's all encompassing?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes and no. And the no part is something I'm doing more recently now. You know, I had you met me a couple years ago, you probably would notice that I'd work at least 90 hours a week. I'd be 100% all in. And it was that way because I wanted it to be that way. Right. I found something I was super passionate about. I would just go heads in, complete focus, no disruptions in my life, no extracurriculars. But what I had realized is that, you know, there is no way for one human to be working that much and have the highest quality of output. You know, you can work 90 hours a week, but how many of those hours are sloppy work? How many of those hours are, you know, spent doing things that could probably be done in half the time if you were sitting down and focused? So now, you know, I'm about to turn 30. You know, that's a different chapter of my life. And I sit down and I almost time box myself, right? I get, you know, I wake up super early still. But when the time comes to work, I fucking work. And when the time comes to disconnect, I disconnect. And that is part of my whole system. And it allows me to recharge, allows me to have those high level thoughts. So when I come back tomorrow, I'm refreshed and ready to go.
I'm experimenting with around the house, not having my iPhone with me because I'll get sucked into junk, and using my Apple Watch so that if I need to, like, stuff will come up. Like, I have to go and do this. Instead of doing it right away, I'll just into the Apple Watch say, Siri, remind me to do this tomorrow, right? Remind me we need this and buy it from Amazon tomorrow. And it really helps. It helps me not get sucked into junk work that really is not very efficient at 9 o'clock on my phone. Okay, so you discover this chatbot thing. You see it before it's launched. Mark Zuckerberg launches it at F8. You do what next?
We go all in. And we go
meaning
all
no
in.
More of this other thing that
not
you built?
Yet. Not okay. yet. I'll
not
get
right
there.
Away.
We go all in that we created one of the first chatbots that was on the platform. It was an unofficial UFC chatbot. And we did this because we were obsessed with UFC internally. But more importantly, we did this because we found an unpublished API. What had happened, and this was before cards, this was before quick replies, this was before any of that stuff. So the experience was, hey, type something and we'll return something back. It was terrible. But what we learned is that people loved interacting with this thing. And it could have been because the demographic was just, you know, I'm a UFC fan, I want to poke around with something. We actually ran a little experiment. This was before Facebook ads were able to point to chatbots. We went to Reddit, bought out the entire subreddit for a weekend of UFC. I think it was like UFC 150 something. We ended up getting users at 3 cents from Reddit who manually went from the web to the messenger and interacted with the bot. That's how engaged people were back then, because no one knew what a bot was.
What do you mean? They'd have to go to Facebook Messenger, search for unofficial chat, unofficial UFC chat bot.
Yep.
That's what it was called. I'm on the chat bot right now. Sweet. And then they'd start talking to the chat bot.
Yeah, so they would actually go to Reddit. We bought out the subreddit. It was $153. That's it. Bought out the subreddit. On top, it was, I think our ad was come talk trash to the UFC chatbot. People clicked on that, went to our landing page. From our landing page, went to the chatbot because there was no direct URLs at that point.
Oh, I see.
It was so new that people had to go through all these hurdles, but people still went through those hurdles. And no one went there for the actual thing we were developing, which was go talk to the chatbot, say Conor McGregor, get the stats on him, see when the next fight's coming up. Everyone went there to just see how a chatbot worked. You know, people talked trash to it. People said, what do you do? What is this? You know, are you a human? Are you real? And that was so promising to see, but it was so painful to see that the experience wasn't there yet. So that's how we started. And we did two or three of those types of bots where it was, you know, strict conversation, you know, say hi, say this keyword, return something back. And the experience wasn't there, but we're smart enough to know because we have gone through this evolution so many times, you know, web to mobile, you know, mobile to now, conversation, that we knew that this would take time. So we went heads down. We didn't release any bots for probably about 8 months, but in those 8 months, I actually went out to New York City and I started talking to people, and I just talked so very long because
you told our producer you went to, was it Madison Avenue? You started going to Madison Avenue, talking to Fortune 500 brands about bots.
Not just Fortune 500s, but also the biggest agencies.
How did you get into Fortune 500s to get the right person there to tell them about chatbots, agencies? How'd you get in?
I cold emailed them.
You'd cold email and say what?
So I had a process and I actually, you know, I don't mind sharing that. So I created scripts, and the scripts were connected to two things. One was an enrichment service, Clearbit, awesome service.
Yes.
And the other was HubSpot, which would pop out sequences, which is essentially their version of drip campaigns. And I would target CMOs because I was smart enough to know that no one knows what a chatbot is, right? No one knows they need a chatbot, but everyone knows that they need an improvement on their ROI. And I knew where Facebook was going with this. I knew that this would be, you know, something that was able to expand the advertising ecosystem. I knew based off of what we were seeing that this would be a better engaging tool, that you'd be able to do clever things with marketing and targeting. So I targeted the CMO and I said, look, we have a way, that is converting customers cheaper and engaging them at higher rates. Are you interested? Because I can come over and show you more. And I did that so many times. I literally cannot count the amount of times everyone, you know, would say, that's awesome, very interested, come over. And then I would tell them about chatbots and there would just be this blank face. And, you know, every single time I got a little bit better understanding where chatbots actually fit in an organization. And, you know, some people could say, we sell them to the CTO. Some people could say, some to the social media team, right? But where I found ultimately is it fit in the marketing budget, and you had to target CMOs who were already spending significant amounts of money buying their customers online. And if they were doing it socially on Facebook, which now we have a script to determine those people, even better, because all you can say is today your destination's here. Tomorrow, it's going to be here. Here are some actual results you can expect when you do that.
You didn't have any results, though. It was just, here's what I think you could expect if we do this.
At the time, we didn't have any results specifically around what, you know, we call them conversion funnel or conversation funnels, which are conversion funnels, what that would actually do from an ROI perspective. But we knew that it would essentially increase engagement. And that we had saw at an unbelievable way from just our hacking around.
Why would they see you? You're just a guy. They don't know if you're a college kid with an idea or someone who's at a competitor or any of it. Why would they see you?
I think, you know, that's a great question. And I keep coming back to the same answer. And I think the answer is that a lot of Fortune 500s right now are scared. They're scared because they see their user base adopting things at an unbelievable rate, and they see the pace at which they're able to actually produce. And it's not in sync anymore, right? You know, a customer's adoption to something like Facebook Messenger, whereas the brand is just getting their heads wrapped around marketing advertising, right? So, you know, I think a lot of it was just pure curiosity. You know, what does this guy have to say? I've kind of heard those words before, but I'm still not, you know, sure what it is. And this could be used as a way to just understand it. And you know, whether we hire this firm or not, at least us as a team understands it. Because one of the things that was consistent across all these meetings is it wasn't just, hey, I sent an email to a CMO and I had a one-on-one meeting with the CMO. It was, I sent an email to the CMO and the CMO invites their entire team.
Just so they could see, what is this new thing? And you didn't even use the word chatbot when you messaged them?
No, I did. I
did. You would. You'd say, here's a way to increase engagement. And what was the other one?
Have an ROI increasement on your advertising spend.
I see. And chatbots are the future. Can I come in and talk to you about it? And the fact that you'd come in, I imagine, is a big thing, right? As opposed to getting on a call.
Absolutely. I'm a face-to-face kind of guy. I hate telephone calls. I mean, a place and time for them, obviously, but I much rather, you know, be in front of you, shut my laptop, and just talk.
I'm noticing the phone calls are incredibly inefficient for business conversations because people will do other things if you talk to them on the phone.
Totally.
And so more and more people will FaceTime me or Zoom, Skype less so, and the video is it's more work, but it's more worth it. Okay, so you do all this stuff. Let me understand this whole Clearbit thing. I want to be sure that I get it. Clearbit just takes the email addresses that you have and gives you more data on them.
Yeah,
I've seen people – one way that I've seen people use it was they would take their email list, run it through Clearbit, find out who their big clients are, and then message those people who work at big companies, and say, can we get on a call with you? We have this added service that you may not know about, and we can help you with it, right? And then they upsell them. Well, how did you use it? How did you get the email addresses that you were enriching?
So I actually started with their prospecting tool, which was essentially, hey, I think I would narrow a target. You know, say I was going after agencies. I would do agencies of 20 million and up, headquartered in New York City. I'd get the list there.
And then
out of each of those agencies, I would say, who's the CMO? If I couldn't get the CMO, then who is the head of digital marketing? If I couldn't get that person, then I would go to someone like a senior social person, right? And I had this system where I was just constantly, you know, prioritize and constantly just write these scripts to pull these people out. And then every email I sent, while it did go into a sequence, I actually had it drop into my drafts so I could hand read over it. And then I would do some research, like go to their website and put something personal in there. Go try to find the person on Twitter and see that they were at an event that I was at and, you know, call them out like that. Because that's the stuff that actually works, right?
Yeah, I find there's a lot of software right now that will send the first message out, and then the second one will come back afterwards and say, hey, you may not have noticed it, so I'm responding to my first message to get it to the top of your inbox. But it's easy to do that. It's so generic that I just immediately respond, stop. Okay.
Exactly. Same. It has a negative effect.
So that's how you started to get customers. That's how you use the chatbot as in,
Well, so I didn't start getting customers. I just started getting our name on the map. This was an 8-month period of this wasn't a sell to me. This was an educational period to me. We knew the market wasn't ready. So to build very compelling bots, but we knew that it would eventually get there. And my whole play was, if I start now and all these larger agencies, all these larger brands know who Matthew Black and Black Ops is, when the time is right, they're going to call me. And I just constantly had that in mind. And it sucked because we deferred a lot of revenue. We almost went bankrupt. We lost some key players. But at the end, it was the exact right thing to do because that's happening now.
Because you told our producer, we went broke. You ran out of money. And the reason is you stopped looking for clients for the previous business that we described, where you're going to build apps for people using the same code over and over. And instead, you just went out there and taught people what these bots were on the hope that when they're ready, that they will buy this, and on the hope that Facebook won't kill the platform and that they will be ready. All right. And as a result, we talked about one of your clients. You got the debt-like WTF. Mm-hmm. Who are some of the other companies? And I've got them here on my screen, but I'll let you tell me which ones you feel comfortable talking about.
So we're working with BarkBox, which is awesome.
BarkBox?
BarkBox is, they're like a subscription box for your dog. Every month a box of toys comes up. And They contacted us. I should say they contacted us after we got put on a 2017, it's called Rockstar Agencies to Watch List. Didn't think anything about it at the time, but it coined us as the chatbot agency. And there was no other chatbot agency. And we didn't realize how powerful it was to start getting coined that way. Anyways, BarkBox contacted us, and they had a cute little idea of saying, hey, we want to build this SMS bot where you pretend to be your dog, and it walks you through a little game, and at the end, it gives you a kind of like an Instagram filter, and people will share it to their Instagram. Fast forward, it was the most engaging thing BarkBox had ever done. 7 days in, over 100,000 messages sent out and received. The response was so great internally that we're working on laying out kind of a 2018 vision, which includes a monthly recurring game, a way for SMS to actually have an upsell utility so you can customize your box, and a few other cool treats that I can't talk about. But
when you say it's the highest engaging thing, is that something that they could compare? It seems like an apples to oranges comparison. You can't say, how are people engaging with this versus Twitter? It's a different kind of engagement. I'd be less likely to want to engage with something on Twitter, and I shouldn't, even though I might care about it, than I would in something that comes into Facebook Messenger that I have to respond to.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when they say the highest engaging initiative they have, they're comparing it to things like Instagram likes, things like you know, Twitter likes. And while I do agree with you, there's definitely, you know, it's not an apples to apples comparison. BarkBox is an interesting company in that the most important thing to them is customer engagement. That's how they gauge how well they're doing as a company. They're not focused, you know, like other companies are, on just turning out customers. They're focused on holding on to customers. So that was, you know, and I think the story there is one, they got into this, you know, with some hesitation. You know, some people were scratching their heads, you know, what is this? Is this going to even be an important thing to our company? To fast forward to today, and it's one of the most important initiatives in the company.
Okay. So BarkBox.
Yep.
What else? Who are a couple of other customers that are coming on board?
Yeah, so we're launching an awesome bot later this week for Haven Life. Haven Life is owned by MassMutual, so one of the biggest insurance companies out there.
What do they want with chatbots?
Yeah, that's when you know things are working. That education I was talking about started to pay off. So Haven Life is kind of coined as the Oscar, but for term life insurance. And they had saw what we did with the student debt company and decided that, hey, we're already buying the majority of our customers through Facebook. Let's build a chatbot to qualify and give someone a quote directly in line. So we built an experience that actually educates someone on what's the difference between a $500,000 policy and a $1 million policy, and what's the difference between a 15-year term and a 30-year term, because ultimately no one really understands the difference. But through a conversational interface, we're able to easily articulate those things, and we integrate with their backend API to display a quote directly in line, and they're able to continue that quote and actually apply.
You're quoting all this stuff yourselves. You're not used to use chat fuel. You're not using chat fuel anymore for all these. All right. One last customer that you've got coming up. Who can you talk about?
Humana. Yeah. And this one is my favorite to talk about because of one reason, the demographic. The chatbot we're building is for the open enrollment for Medicare in November. And this is like a Super Bowl for them. You know, they at any given time, they have up to 1,500 concurrent phone calls of people trying to enroll for Medicare.
And, just during this open enrollment period.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's insane. But the target demographic is 65 and up. And no one's focusing on that age group, although it is the fastest growing age group on Facebook. So the initiative there is, one, will a 65 plus person actually interact with a chatbot? we had to build an entirely different strategy, one that's, more instructional than you would with a younger demographic who's more used to talking to, newer forms of tech. But I think it's going to perform really, really well. And ultimately, it's to educate you on Humana's version of Medicare, and then schedule a call and apply for Medicare.
All right. If anyone wants to check you out, and I do see, where's this list here? I've got the list of the hot 10 agencies you must know in 2017. There you are. You're listed as the chatbot and AI geeks. I don't think anyone else on this list has chatbot or AI on their list, and so I could see why you'd get customers from it. The URL for anyone who wants to skip the list and just go check out your company is blackops.nyc, because you're in New York City.
That's correct.
Blackops.nyc. Guys, if you're into this at all, I feel like this is a transformational period. There were these huge companies being built when we went to mobile, huge companies, I said, being built when we went to SaaS. This is it right now. This is the time. And I'm excited to hear how you did it. I'm thankful to you and to my two sponsors, designcrowd.com/mixergy, if you're looking for a bunch of designs from a crowd of people who are really good. And if you need a developer, go check out toptal.com/mixergy. And we also have a chatbot. Go check ours out at botacademy.com. Botacademy.com. You can see what our chatbot's like. You know what? I went to your site. I don't see that you guys have a chatbot.
It's on purpose.
You don't want, why not?
There's strengths and weaknesses. We do not believe that a chatbot is good for selling B2B.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so what
All
you have instead is.
Are for B2C customers.
And so you have a human there. Her name is Hillary right now. I see that she and I have been exchanging messages because I wanted to see, is she a bot? She is not a bot. She's a real person. And anyone who wants to go see the real business, go check them out at blackops.nyc. Matthew, thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks. Bye, everyone.